Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Are you really buying a car online on AutoTrader right now?
Really? I can get super specific with dealer listings and see cars based on my budget.
Mom!
You can really have it delivered.
Or pick it up.
Mommy, look!
I think your kid is walking up the slide.
Really?
AutoTrader. Buy your car online. Really?
He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
Welcome everybody here to this episode of the Lakers Lounge Podcast. Apologies here for just my voice at the onset of the show. We had some audio issues with StreamYard at the very beginning of it. The chat alerted us. Tim then told me. I fixed it live on the air. You don't need to hear all of that. It was all of the niceties that most people don't even like from podcasts anyway. So I'm just going to go ahead, skip all of that stuff, and jump right into the conversation once it starts sounding decent. All right? Cool. Bye. All right. We will go ahead and continue on. I'm sorry, guys. That is a really annoying thing to have happen in the middle of the show. So anyway, so what did you think of the second season that J.J. Redick had, just kind of in a macro sense? You come into the season, you're thinking that it's a, you know, he's still has a ton to learn. He was coming off of a frankly embarrassing performance in that Minnesota Timberwolves series. And that was certainly something I was a little nervous about going into year two. What did you think about, you know, his performance now compared to your expectations going in?
Yeah, I think year two, the floor was definitely better. There were few of those rookie mistakes, like no subs in the second half of a playoff game. That shouldn't Crazy. Happen. It had never happened. It won't happen again. Things like that were, to the layperson, to, you know, find a person on the street that's not, a Lakers fanatic, like me or anybody like that, and they'll tell you, like, that's crazy, why would he do that? Those sorts of things weren't there. There weren't, like,
hey,
long
how
stretches.
How dare
where
you
was...
mention that? Would you mention that if he wasn't a first-year coach? How dare you?
And that's the thing, right? Like, everything's on a curve, and it makes it hard to talk about, because before you give any sort of input, you have to say, all right, well, what's the scale? Is the scale comparing him to the other, like, NBA head coaches who had never been a coach before? Because if you look at that, he's already one of the best. It's like Steve Kerr, JJ, and then nearly everyone else that's done that in their first stint, wherever that was, flamed out pretty quickly. Year two or year three, almost all of them had an awful win percentage or were fired in the middle of the season or some mix of those, or lost the locker room very quickly. And JJ has been able to navigate through that. The feedback that I got last year from the locker room, the feedback I got this year from agents and players was he communicates well, and he communicates so much better than Ham and his staff. And the people side, the leadership side, it's just night and day. Yeah. And I think you can you know, you want to be good with the X's and O's. I think the X's and O's can win you a title or lose you a title. But if you don't have the leadership side down, you're not going to have a chance to get to that point because you're going to lose the locker room. And that hasn't been an issue. But I also think that he's cleaned up some of the things that were providing a lower floor on certain occasions, especially in the playoffs. And so that was good. But I would say for the most part, when I look at the game, and I'm an X's and O's guy, I've got a lot of smart data people I employ, and I try to learn the most from that, and I use a lot of data. A lot of what they were good at year one, they were good at in year two. A lot of where they struggled in year one, they struggled in year two. And when I look at the metrics that I have in front of me that look at like how well are we optimizing our roster, it was about the same. And when I look schematically, X's and O's wise, like they were really strong attacking hedging in year one. Same thing here. They were pretty weak attacking drop in year one. Same thing here. The players changed a little bit. The injury situation changed a little bit. But looking at like the specific decisions that were made and what he's drawing up on the whiteboard and what they're putting on the film, it was a lot of the same, which in some cases was good. In other cases was concerning. In some cases, like the fact they were the switchiest defense in the league, I was frankly surprised because I didn't think this roster lined up to be the switchiest roster in the league. So I was left encouraged in some ways, concerned in others. I still think we have a lot to learn, but to me, him getting more playoff experience and being able to hold serve, be able to return a couple adjustments, I think that was a really good step forward. I don't think they were perfect. I still think there were things they can improve upon, but it was a step in the right direction.
I agree with essentially everything you said there. And I think most specifically, the point that I hope we hammer home over the course of the show is that, you know, the amount that they switch and, you know, some of the offense that they run systemically and his kind of vision of basketball aligning with the Lakers' actual roster. I think that's my biggest concern for him moving forward. And hopefully this offseason, Rob Pelinka and he will work together to build a roster that more closely aligns with his basketball ideology so that, you know, he doesn't have to compromise per se as much. But I do think that is probably the fairest criticism of his tenure so far is that I don't always get the sense, even though he says it's something that he wants to be really, really good at. I don't always get the sense that he, it's really clear sometimes that he is coaching a roster that he wishes looked a certain way. Right. And, the switchiness, like if you're switching as frequently as the Lakers switch and you have Austin Reeves and Luka Doncic on the court, well, then you're kind of sort of doing the other team's job for them. And when you're switching to the extent that they do while you have Jared Vanderbilt on the court, and it's really easy to get Jared Vanderbilt off of the guy that he's on the ball for, and even frankly on the court to guard, again, you're kind of sort of doing the other team's job for them. And I think that commitment to those, you know, again, ideologies, especially defensively, that's something that I am a little nervous about. Hopefully the Lakers are, you know, go into next year with a team that can be more switchy. But to a certain extent, if you have Luka and Austin, you aren't going to be very switchy. Like you know, if you switch too easily, then you're going to have Austin either on the ball more than he should be, or even more dangerously as the operating as the low man, which I thought you did a really good job of charting in the postseason where, and I'll get out of your way here again in a second, but like I people oftentimes when they think of Austin's, you know, defensive shortcomings, they think of him being put on an island and having to guard out there in isolation. But what I think is far more detrimental to the Lakers defense is when he finds himself as a rim protector, which he has basically no shot at.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all. And it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game. And head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Are you really buying a car online on Auto Trader right now?
Really? I can get super specific with dealer listings and see cars based on my budget.
Mom!
You can really have it delivered.
Or pick it up.
Mommy, look!
I think your kid is walking up the slide.
Really?
Auto Trader. Buy your car online. Really?
Yeah, let me read off some names here. Nikola Jokic, Alperen Şengün, Joel Embiid, Evan Mobley, Austin Reeves, Jarrett Allen, Chet Holmgren. One of these names is not like the others. These are the NBA leaders in the playoffs in shots contested at the rim. Austin should not be that high. He should not be that. He's too short, right? Like, part of switching, the idea of switching in theory is we are able to take away your ball screens and your off ball screens by like killing the action through switching. And there are plays you can run to attack switching. I would love if the Lakers offense did more of them, but ideally, in theory, it pushes the offense towards iso ball, whether that's on the perimeter or the post. But if you switch too willingly, too easily, and the personnel you have isn't five guys that are comparably sized where it really doesn't matter where they are, they can either be on ball or they could be a rim protector. Like, that's great. That's ideal. If you have a roster like the Lakers roster where there's like one and a half rim protectors, it's critical that that guy stays by the rim. Like, I don't care if it's Rudy Gobert, Anthony Davis, like, pick your rim protector. If they're standing guarding someone at the three-point line and they can't rotate, they don't matter as a rim protector because they're not there. And way too often, the little things within switching, the team wasn't doing well. It was, you know, you could have your 101, your 201, your 301, your 401 classes in college. LA's right now at, like, 201 with switching. And a lot of the little things that you can do to still switch but be more effective at it, they haven't engaged in as often. And that is how you end up with Austin Reeves as your top rim protector in the playoffs and your centers being so low on the list. So, like, we do think of who's that guy that's getting cooked on the island, but there are a lot of plays guys get cooked on the island and it doesn't matter and it's not a highlight because the right rim protector's in place. And with how the Lakers defended, there was no rim protection and opponent shot, let's see here, 73% at the rim against Austin Reeves in the playoffs. And that is how, like, Austin can look bad, but, you know, whoever it is, whether that's DeAndre Ayton or Luke Kennard or, you know, pick whoever it is on the playoff on the perimeter that's getting blown by, they end up getting, you know, fingers pointed at them, whereas it should be a team defensive thing. So that to me was infuriating defensively. It's like, you can be better at this, but they're not really engaging in that. So I'd love to see them spend this offseason, study the best switching defenses, try to maybe poach some coaches from other good switching defenses, do what you can do. If this is truly how JJ wants to play, to your point, try to surround him with players that match that identity and vision, but then also try to find the little nuances within it to be better at it. Like Frank Vogel, masterclass drop coverage. It was not working switching. He is a like very much out of his element with that.
Yeah.
JJ is, he wants to switch, but he's not at that masterclass level yet. And so we're not able to overcome some of the roster shortcomings, which at the end of the day, fans and media can still point to the players and say, well, he got beat. He didn't rotate well. He didn't stay in front of the perimeter. And it, at the end of the day, trickles down to the players, but coaching decisions help set them up for success or failure. So I think that's key. And I mean, offensively, it's the same kind of deal where the offense we see and what JJ wants to do is run JJ Redick offense. It's JJ Redick, the player kind of stuff where we see like such a high percentage of what the team is doing be off ball screens. And when you are building an offense, you want to build it around your best players. You don't want to build it around Dalton Connect in year one and Luke Kennard in year two. And when I'm looking at like these Lakers players this season, Luka had a career high usage in off-ball screens. LeBron, only his rookie year was higher than this year. Austin was at a career high. Kennard was 0.2 of a percentage point off of a career high. Rui was at a career high. And like, when you think of this team in theory, you think of the star players, you're not in theory like thinking of, you know, pin down some flare screens, let's run Steph Curry, Klay Thompson offense. And it just seems like a little bit of a mismatch with what in theory gets you the most impact out of the skill sets that you have to play with.
I want to talk about, because part of this too is, especially with a coach who is as young as JJ Redick is, one of the things I remember covering, you know, the Lakers search for assistant coaches and being kind of concerned by that process. And you and I were sending messages back and forth, you know, during that process of like, I don't know about this staff. And I do think that they have done better as a coaching staff than I thought they would, as you kind of alluded to. I will also echo the concerns from the locker room dissipated significantly after Darvin was gone, to such an extent that like it almost didn't matter who followed him, that it was going to get better. But I do think that, like, you know, a coaching staff, an assistant coaching staff that I was pretty nervous about going in, I would say I have been pleasantly surprised by. I don't know how much of that is expectations or what, but I you know, we've even heard Greg St. Jean come up in the Portland Trailblazers coaching search. I thought that was, you know, that caught my attention. What do you think of the job that the coaching staff has done here, and specifically as it pertains to some of these ideas that JJ Redick has that clearly come from his experience as a player? Could the staff be doing a maybe a bit better of a job to kind of guide him into the strengths of this Lakers roster, rather than strictly from the experiences that JJ had as a player?
So to answer your question, yeah, I think that there could be more support from the rest of the coaching staff. Like, we focus so much on the head coach, and at the end of the day, they're the face on the pictures. They're the name on the, you know, press releases. They're the guy talking to the media, but it's an infrastructure. It's a whole staff that ends up making a difference. And especially for someone that is coming in without that experience, without having developed all of those little nuances and skill sets, because a head coach has to do a lot. And a head coach is different from an OC, different from a DC, a defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator, all these mm-hmm. different things. They're different jobs, different roles and responsibilities. And you want to have strong people across the board. And I know for me, like, the number one concern I have had with JJ as a candidate was, he hasn't coached with anybody. Who is he going to bring in?
Right.
He hasn't exactly been in the trenches. He hasn't developed those relationships. He hasn't had time to grow a network to be able to pull from. And we saw that play out where the entirety of the coaching staff were folks that just happened to be jobless at the time. Most of them having been terminated from their last job for, in many cases, poor performance, other than Lindsay Harding, who was at the G League affiliate for the Kings. The Kings didn't have interest in bringing her up to the NBA team, and they were able to successfully poach there. But there were zero successful poaches from other NBA teams. And it seemed like on the salary side, LA wasn't competitive in terms of just having proof of concept. I don't know that I want to go leave my NBA coaching job for another team and go be part of this. If, you know, is Rob on the hot seat? How much time will JJ have to figure it out? AD and LeBron, they're getting older. Like, it was a different situation then than it is now. And by now we have a younger core star with Luka. You have some real proof of concept with JJ as a coach. You have a GM that has been extended. You're getting additional infrastructure, executive roles, support staff investments. I would think LA should be in a much better position today than they were a couple of years ago to go grab good coaches from other teams, pay them more money, bring them over, and upgrade what you're bringing to the table. We saw, and I think to your point, there were fewer concerns or there was less chatter about the rest of the coaching staff as this experience has gone along. To me, part of that is Jay just really imposed his will. He's an intense guy. We see that with the media. He's like that behind the scenes. I mean, the information I was getting was in year one, about halfway into the year, he really reshaped what defensively their approach was going to be. And it became the JJ blueprint with the switch everything, shrink, have a compact shell. Like, that is what his vision was, and that's what he wanted to do. And he overrode what McMillan was doing as the DC and said, this is how we're going to play now, figure it out. And that is a style of defense Nate McMillan has never run. And so you are bringing someone in to be a specialist and to bring their experience and then not using it. And I think at that time, switching everything, especially after the AD trade with him being out of there and having only Jackson Hayes as your center, it made sense. But year two, it didn't quite make sense, but it was still the same thing. So I wasn't necessarily worried about it year one, but this year it was weird. And then offensively, I mean, the feedback I got year one for ATO's Greg St. Jean, he was drawing stuff up. He was helping, you know, figure out what they were going to run. This year, that responsibility was not his. JJ designed every ATO other than certain circumstances. And I know there was once or twice during the season where he did call out St. Jean for having an idea or drawing up a play. But like it was clarified to me after I was tweeting about it that, no, this is not his job this year. And so with things like that, with things like the fact that, like, it very much looks like the JJ Redick offense in terms of the kinds of plays that they're running. Just when you look at just how good are our ISO sets or our pick and roll sets or our post-up sets, they're more basic. The off-screen stuff, it's advanced. It's really good. And I think that's because that's JJ's experience. He's done it and he's good at it. He was not a post player, right? He was not a pick and roll guy. And I think he needs to bring in minds that have experience doing good stuff in those areas, and they should be able to be more effective. So, like, go out, go see if you can grab people from the Knicks or the Hornets who have strong lead guards, good offensive optimization, overperform their talent offensively. The Cavs, the Celtics, the Thunder, other teams that overperformed well defensively, teams that optimized their rosters best in our metrics at B-Ball Index were Boston, the Thunder, the Trailblazers, the Spurs, and the Heat. Of those teams, Miami is one of the other top switch usage teams in the league. So maybe go see if you can grab, if Chris Quinn isn't offered a head coach job for the third cycle in a row, go throw him a bag and see if you can bring him in and try to improve what you're doing defensively. Like, I would want to be aggressive in surrounding JJ with the best folks that you can, because at the end of the day, he might ultimately be responsible with the wins and the losses, but that support staff is critical for the team's success.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all. And it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game. And head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Are you really buying a car online on AutoTrader right now?
Really? I can get super specific with dealer listings and see cars based on my budget.
Mom!
You can really have it delivered.
Or pick it up.
Mommy, look!
I think your kid is walking up the slide.
Really?
AutoTrader. Buy your car online. Really?
I'm glad that you mentioned this, because there's this tendency, and I think the Lakers are kind of pre-wired for this tendency, where the coaching has been, I think, better than expected, and JJ has been kind of far enough ahead of schedule that the Lakers might think to themselves, no, this is working, why should we mess with this? And I'm of the opinion that you should always be optimizing, you should always be evaluating, you should always be taking, you know, very honest notes about the internal processes that are going on, and I think there are still some spots that the Lakers could really improve in that regard, and frankly, like, across the board, really, like, not just in terms of replacing people, but adding to the staff. Like, one of the things that we've been harping on a lot recently on the show has been the Lakers' issues with developing younger talent, right? And if a player is already kind of wired to work on their own and and they're this kind of self-sufficient and self-driven type of personality. That player does really well with the Lakers because the Lakers like to say they empower that kind of self-determination. But if it's somebody who does need that extra guidance, does need the nagging and making sure that they're in and getting in the extra work and having that extra work be directed, that's something that the Lakers, I don't think, have ever really been particularly good at. What kind of steps do you think the Lakers could take as Rob Pelinka and as JJ Redick talk about getting younger, getting more athletic and all this stuff? What kind of things would you be looking for as the Lakers look to develop youth better than they have?
It's a lot of different things. Like, you want to have a lot of player development comes behind the scenes. And so I can't see it on the film. I'm not going to be able to
almost
tell you
all
whether
of it,
good or
really.
Bad. Yeah, you know, like, yeah. Like Adu Thiro playing an extra 100 regular season minutes. How much does that matter for his player development? The research that's been done says it doesn't really matter that much. If you're going to play him substantially more minutes, then maybe, but just getting him a little bit more on film, I think it's good, but you can still, like, there's still really high caliber play in the G League. And if he's able to get minutes there, you're looking at the film there, you're able to address mistakes there. Like, that matters too. I like those guys getting minutes where they can find them. If you can afford to do that because they're ready at the NBA level, great. If it has to come at the G League level, great. I am no player development expert, but I think a lot of it is having the data to track what you're doing. I think there were some pictures recently of the NOAA, I think is the name of the company, the shooting, you know, every time you shoot a shot, it shows you like the arc on the shot and where it landed on the rim. Little things like that help inform you so you can make the right tweaks instead of just saying, ah, your percentage is low, let's help your percentage, or just shoot more. Like, if you're going to make actual tweaks to form, you know, have a shooting coach and use the right information to be able to advise that decision-making. Player development is a really interesting concept. And a lot of guys, they have their own personal coaches, especially during the offseason. And so it is really tricky to try to gauge how good is the team at player development. It is something that we've started putting some metrics together on. But for JJ, if we're looking at guys that he coached both seasons, it's only like, what, like 8 players or so? So there's not a big sample size. I'm not really drawing any conclusions from it. So I wouldn't tell you how to come up with the revamped youthful Lakers basketball team, but add, you know, good talent, keep them around long enough to see how much they can develop, whether you're drafting them or using two-way guys, give them opportunities and have the right level of support from a coaching standpoint, from a data standpoint, and see what they could do.
Yeah. The personal coach thing is I think a point of real contention here, in that, like, every team's players has the personal coaches, and every team's, you know, all basically NBA players, like, they go to either their own performance coaches, or they'll have, you know, coaches who watch over several players, stuff like that. To me, the breakdown is in the direction, right? Like, I would like for the Lakers to do a better job of telling, you know, the personal coach, hey, this is how we view this player, and this is what this player needs to be good at or get better at, so that when we come back from the offseason and over the years, this player gets better at these certain things, and this person fits our vision of you know, him for the future. And I think, you know, with the way that the Lakers have operated with their personnel, and as you talk about, like, the amount of turnover that we have seen from the Lakers, that plays a significant role in the lack of development here. Because do the Lakers have a vision of who Dalton was supposed to be other than JJ reincarnate? Like, do the Lakers have a vision of Bronny that is something other than, well, just get as good as you can get so that it doesn't look as bad, that, you know, that there are fewer conversations about your development? Like, I always kind of look at the Thunder, and, you know, the Knicks are like this, where there's a baseline of expectation for players, and you know, like, the way that they defend, the way that they shoot, the way that they, you know, do any number of things, and there's a direction to the development that you'll see from those players They all tend to get better at certain things. And that's something that I think the Lakers hopefully improve at here over the next few years.
Yeah, you need role clarity. You need to know what am I aiming for? What will my job be that I'm trying to develop? Because, you know, if you tell me you're going to have a job in, I don't know, finance, there are a bunch of different parts of jobs in finance. If I'm going to prepare for that, you need to tell me what exactly I'm doing. If, you know, we want to get you on the court. Well, great. Tell me where there's fit. Let me look at the roster. Let me see where there might be minutes. How do I become good enough at the right skill sets that you feel comfortable enough plugging me in? Like, have role clarity, set goals, and then you have to have realistic timeframes. When we drafted Adu Thiro, and I look at that as a player, he's exciting. He's got fun highlights. He looks like a guy that, to me, if I'm being realistic about where he was to start, that's probably a guy that, like, in year three, I'd expect to be playing NBA rotation minutes. And if it's any sooner, that's ahead of schedule. But if it doesn't, you know, if it's year two and he's not there yet, that's not a failure if you're being realistic about what you started with. And I think with Bronny, I think with Hero, those were guys that when they were drafted, they weren't ready yet. And if anyone was giving up on them, we're just not at that point yet. I think we're starting to reach that spot, but you have to draft guys and be realistic with them, their agents. I don't know that you're necessarily going to tell the fans, like, hey, you're not going to see this guy for 3 years. But to me, that's another part of the equation where I'd preach some patience, because the picks we've seen need to be developed under JJ. Like, one, I don't think we've reached the due date yet. And then two, most of it's happening behind the scenes. So are we seeing enough just growth in the right direction so far? Not necessarily are they ready to play real contributing minutes. I think so. I think we're on track. But we're also working really small samples that we are able to see publicly. So it will be hard to tell. And by the time you can tell, either you've thrown 3 years away or, you know, it worked out perfectly. But I don't think we're there yet to be able to evaluate.
Let's segue awkwardly to a funny moment from this year that I meant to bring up earlier as kind of an icebreaker, but now I'm remembering again. I think it was Kobe Price asked, or no, I forget which beat reporter asked JJ about the organized offense, and JJ gave an answer that was pretty clearly, I don't know if you took it this way, kind of sort of directed it at the statistical findings that you've been kind of charting over the course of the last couple of years or however long, about organized offense. So, like, one, how did that arrive at your doorstep? Did you just sit, like, how many, like, did your phone go, like, just berserk with text from people saying, oh, I think JJ just called you out? And two, could you kind of speak on the process of charting organized offense and of understanding what sets look like what and you know, what goals it seems that the Lakers have versus the goals that they should have, and all of the things that you have, I think, done a really good job on charting, but seem to ruffle some feathers, at least in that moment.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I received a lot of text messages, a lot of Discord pings, a lot of mentions. Yeah. And you are 100% correct in terms of, like, the sentiment of how the message was delivered. It was pointed. It was not hard to tell who he was talking about. And it came off as, you know, certainly condescending. I'll say is, in terms of the message itself, like, he effectively said, like, we are organized. Organized offense to us is X. It is not Y. And what he said was part of X, I agree with. What he said, it's not that why, I also agree with. And so for me, if you remove the tone of it and I just look at the transcript, I look at it, I'm like, oh yeah, like, I'm on board. I get, you know, he gets it. I'm cool. When you listen to it, it's like, oh shit. like, this doesn't look great. And I totally understand for most people that aren't closely tracking what I'm doing and they couldn't tell you what the definition is. They listen to that quote and they're like, oh, Tim doesn't know what he's talking about. And so certainly damaging from that perspective. Afterwards, had some conversations. The Lakers and I, we are on the same page when it comes to what organized offense is. We did see a boost from the team after that point, and I hope to see them continue to thrive and get better and do well with this. Really, what this is it's effectively play call rate. And anytime you're a basketball team, you know, you bring the ball up the court, you can just kind of freelance. You know, we're going to get the ball to LeBron in the post and play out of it, or we're going to run a ball screen, or we're going to just ISO. Those are freelance plays. There are other plays, like the Lakers will run their stack ball screens, or Spain pick and roll. That's a set play. There are other times, well, actually, I guess the stack ball screens is a good example, where they'll call stack, and you'll see JJ, you know, hit his fists together one over the other. That's their signal for stack. It is for a lot of teams. And they'll kind of read and react to how the defense is playing it, and they'll have a couple different options off of it. And, you know, you hope they do well with it. There's, you know, a spectrum for how much the coach is controlling exactly what's run. But from what I'm looking at, I log every possession of every game of the season.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
Yeah. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored.
It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all. And it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game. And head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Baseball is back, and BetMGM, official partner of Major League Baseball, is bringing the heat all season long. Step up to the plate all season with Swing for the Fences, the free-to-play game where every swing could score you rewards. We're talking parlay boost tokens, odds boost tokens, same-game parlay boost, and even bonus spins all season long. And the action doesn't stop there. Get more out of every at-bat with MLB same-game parlay boost. Stack your picks and boost your potential payout. Plus, lock in bigger value with MLB odds boost tokens and MLB parlay boost tokens all season long. More boosts, more swings, more chances to win. Download the BetMGM app and step up to the plate today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus and present in Ohio. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards payback and unrestricted withdrawable funds. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
I have, let me take a look here, over the past four Lakers seasons, I have watched the film on afterwards, not live, but film afterwards, looking at the play, rewinding, fast forward, go back over and over until I get it. 31,530 plays. I have watched the play and I have written down literally exactly what happened. Did they run a play? If they ran a play, what was the play? What were they trying to do? Who got the scoring possession? If they were set up by somebody, who was the teammate that set them up? What was the shot quality? What was the result? Who was on the court? All of those things. And so there's a lot of info gathering and you could do a lot from it. NBA data is at a great point in today's game where they have a lot tracked. What they don't have yet that is good is this X's and O's stuff. And Basketball Index, not just Tim Laker stuff, but Basketball Index, we consult with NBA teams. We consult with WNBA teams. We consult with college teams. We consult with EuroLeague teams, G League teams, other international teams, random high school coaches, AAU coaches. And I'll tell you, the data that they have available to them does not get to this level of detail. It takes somebody in the video room tracking these things. And so there's true still value. The AI is not taking over. The coaches need to be good at their jobs. The video coordinators need to be good at their jobs. Know ball, know how to track things, have the right infrastructure. And there are a lot of different parts to it. For me, the organized offensive rate is just kind of a yes, no. Did you run something or did you freelance? Generally, and I've seen this over four seasons in a row, I've tracked this for other teams. There are now people tracking the same infrastructure because I set them up with templates, or they've kind of molded into their own for the Knicks, for the Hawks, for the Grizzlies. Somebody's getting set up to do Philly next year. They are doing what I'm tracking. And in each of those cases, running a play is better than not running a play. Now, it's not as simple as just run a play, right? You want to run the right play. You want to run good plays.
Yeah.
And there's more depth to it. There's more nuance to it. For example, if you're running a ball screen play, it's like a rock, paper, scissors game. If you're going to run drop coverage against me, I want to run the part of my playbook that attacks drop coverage. I don't want to run the part of my playbook that attacks switching. And so that is something I track. That's called coverage fit. And I have data on that. the Lakers last season had, 55% coverage fit. This year, 54%. It was worse than under Darvin Ham. I'd love to see that improve. I also track, like, if you are running an ISO or a post-up and the defense actively, like, proactively is sending a double team, or they're just sending some deterring help. So, for example, the Spurs beat the Thunder in their round, and SGA's ISO game was very bad. His shooting percentages were not great because they weren't sending hard double teams like the Lakers did. They were sending guys into gaps and not letting him drive, kind of inducing jump shots. I count that as help as well. When that happens, I track, did the Lakers counter it and how? Did they run a flare screen? Did they cut from certain positions? What did they do? In year one, the Lakers countered 47% of the time. In year two, they countered 40% of the time. So a step backwards. And I'd say that needs to improve as well. Those are some of the granular little things. The organized offense rate, 54% in year one, 53% in year two. I'd love to see 55% or better. 60% is awesome. And in each of these things, if you want to go see exactly what I said, the Lakers ran on, 8 minutes left in the third quarter of game 42 or whatever it is. I have my spreadsheets. They're posted. They're available. You pay, $10, and you get access to all of that in my Discord. If you want to go, check my work, and I have people that check my work. In each of these things, what I'm saying is better is tends to be more efficient. Like big picture, large sample sizes, it's been more efficient. When you win the rock, paper, scissors game, you score more points. When you run plays, you score more points, all of that. And so it's very structured. It's very regimented. You can track it for any team, any style of play. And at the end of the day, it trickles down to the players, your stars, your role players. They are less effective when you tell them, hey, go make something happen, instead of letting the play work for them and create the advantage for them. And so whether it's elevating a star from, an A to an A+, or elevating a role player from a C- to a B-, these things matter. And, it's interesting to me. It's been fun. I think of all the things that we've done, all the things I've done at B-Ball Index or just with the Lakers stuff, this is one that has really kind of cut through and has gotten me talking to coaches at the college level, at the pro level, overseas and domestically more than anything. And it's really neat to see teams start tracking things and incorporate data into how they do their scheme. Because for most of the teams I've played on, coached on, been on staff for, usually the playbook is like, hey, I ran this a couple years ago in college, or I saw this play, it looks cool, I'm going to run it. And most of the scheme content you see is must add action. And they show a play and they show it working, but they don't explain why it works, when it works. And there's a whole world, if you want to dive into it. What it works against is critical. You can, a double drag ball screen, that absolutely annihilates hedging defense. It doesn't really do much against switching. It doesn't do much against drop coverage. And it's one of the things the Lakers ran against drop coverage most of the season, and they weren't all that effective with it. So things like that I track. And to me, what's interesting is in the games, the team did run good offensive scheme. They had a high play call rate. They were countering help. They were winning rock, paper, scissors in ball screens. They were dominant. If you ever saw me tweet out a picture of, or a GIF of the Death Star, those were the quarters, the halves, the games where the process was really strong. Because I think with this roster talent plus good process, you're going to get amazing results. Not every game. You're going to miss some shots sometimes. At the end of the day, make or miss league, all of that. There's variance involved. But good process game after game, you are going to be more consistent. You're going to score more points. You're going to win more games. And I don't have the numbers in front of me. I'd have to pull them up. But when the team does well in these things, they win 70-80% of the time. And to me, it's just a consistency thing. And I hope to see them reflect, improve, and be better with this. I know it's different. I know it's kind of new tracking, different tracking. Not everybody does this, but I think it'll be an interesting thing to take a look at moving forward. And I think if they do improve on those things and they gear the offense more towards the skills of the players with ball screens, with ISO, instead of being such an off-screen heavy team, we could see them improve on their offensive optimization data, which for the data we have at B-Ball Index was 24th ranked in the league last season and 24th ranked in the league this season. And what goes into that is comparing their talent, which we have a bunch of talent data, and we map out how impactful should you be based on your physical tools, your job, and your skill grades. Last year, they were second in offensive talent. This year, third. So if the scheme was kind of neutral, they should have been a top five team, even accounting for injuries and minutes played. So them being 11th in offensive rating last year, 10th this year, to me, those are disappointing numbers, even accounting for those kind of moving variables of the injuries.
I want to talk about the personnel really quickly before we let you go. The notion of organized offense and stuff like that, like in freestyling versus calling a set. You know, when you have a player like Luka who can kind of bend defenses to his will by way of his own pick and roll, and obviously the term for it that I use most frequently and other people use most frequently is Luka ball. What type of balance would you prefer to see there where it's like, that's this dude's strength. He is basically unique in that strength and those kinds of plays and the positions that he puts himself and his teammates and opposing defenses into versus, you know, the like you just talked about, the caliber of team that the Lakers can be when they are more optimized, you know, systematically with kind of a more diverse, organized approach?
I think that's a really good question. And when you have a star, it's really easy to just say like, all right, go cook, like go make it happen. You could do it. Yeah. And the floor is so much higher with you know, telling Luka to go make something happen compared to Nick Smith Jr. or Gabe Vincent or somebody. What we do see in tracking this, and I've seen this with Anthony Davis, LeBron James, and Luka Doncic, is their scoring and their passing ends up more effective. For Luka, there actually wasn't a huge difference this year in terms of his effectiveness as a scorer, whether the team was organized or not, because in a lot of situations, he is shooting like heavily contested threes regardless. But what we do see a big difference in is how involved he is. When the team is freelancing, you are more letting the defense dictate what can happen. And we see guys more involved, taking up more shots, more often being the passer that you ideally wouldn't see in those situations. Whereas when you are organized, you are deciding who's going to be the shooter in the corner spacing, who's going to be the role man, who's going to be the ISO guy or the screener, all of that. And we see, like, LeBron is much more involved as a passer when the team runs plays. Luka is much more involved with his facilitation for others when the team runs plays. His scoring usage, exactly the same. It's actually 0.4% different for Luka, organized versus freelancing. There's basically no difference. But when the team is running plays, you're able to really get, like, basically every lob you saw Luka throw this season was a set play. Maybe not every, but probably 75, 80%. Those were called sets. And those are fun plays. It's high effectiveness basketball. Luka is more a hub and more of a centerpiece when you're calling things. Whereas when the team freelances, it's more like Marcus Smart ends up having to go make things happen. Or DeAndre Ayton go make something happen, or Rui go make something happen. And I don't think that is ideal. You want the ball to be in Luka's hands, LeBron's hands, Austin's hands, as passers and as scorers. So that's what it looks like for Luka. For Austin, it's more involved, and Austin is way more effective. We saw that in regular season and the playoffs when the team is running plays versus not running plays. For Luka, it didn't matter as much as a score. For Austin, it did, and it has for multiple years now.
It makes sense with Austin, right? More limited player than Luka, and the way that he goes, like, I would imagine his free throw rate skyrockets in set plays versus, or, you know, organized sets versus freelancing stuff. And that's a critical stat for Austin. Tim, I've taken up too much of your time. I really appreciate you hopping on and taking time out of your off season and sitting down and nerding out about. I always find myself whenever we have these conversations, like, I just kind of, I say, yeah, we're going to talk about JJ Redick, but it always devolves into some type of ideological basketball conversation with you. And I always look forward to them. So thanks very much for indulging me.
Yeah, man. I appreciate you having me. It's fun to put the film away, put the calculator down and talk.
Make sure you guys are checking out, though, all of his work and his team's work at Basketball Index. It is an absolutely critical tool if you want to remain as informed about the NBA as you can possibly be. Also, check out the Lakers Exceptionalism Discord. A lot of great stuff in there, as well as some bonus pods and stuff like that from Tim, and anything else that you want to plug before we get you out of here?
That's what it's all about, man. Those two things are where you can find me. It is a WNBA time of year. I know the finals are happening, but mm-hmm. we also just launched some cool WNBA resources. So if you want to dig into player resources, team resources, you want to go win some fights with your friends or your enemies online, we'll equip you to do so with the stats over at B-Ball Index. All the WNBA stuff is free. And over at the, if you listen to me today and you say, hey, what the hell is this guy talking about? And you want to learn more about the X's and O's, I have 24 hours of recorded X's and O's content that bring you from A to Z, starting from, you know, like locations on the court all the way up to like what are the plays you run? What are the concepts you run to attack drop coverage yeah. versus hedging versus switching? All those sorts of things. I have all of that in my Discord at the, I believe it's the courtside tier, which I think is like $12 a month, $14 a month, something like that. You can pay for it, get through all the content, quit whenever you'd like. But I also have bonus recorded podcasts and those scheme X's and O tracker things. If you want to go back and look through a game and try to calibrate your mind on, you know, what is organized versus what is freelance, all of that is available to you. I think very affordable. So check that out. There's a link in my bio on Twitter at @Tim_NBA.
Thanks very much, bud. Congrats on all the success to this point, and we'll have to have you on more frequently this upcoming season, because I didn't do it enough the last year.
No worries, man. I was very busy on my end joining the ranks of fathers, so I one less podcast, you know, every maybe a month, every other month. My wife much appreciated. So thanks for having me. I hope everyone enjoys the offseason, enjoys the World Cup, and let's keep an eye out for the draft, free agency, all that good Laker stuff coming up.
Absolutely. Congrats on that. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. A reminder, please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. Turn on notifications. Share the show. Tell your friends that you love it. Tell your enemies that you hate it. Use that promo code HMA on Prize Picks. And until the next time you guys hear from us, I'm Anthony Irwin. That was Cranjus McBasketball. Have a great rest of your weekend. Make somebody else's. And go USA tonight, this evening. Can't wait.
What if everything you learn in history class was only half the story? I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets mysterious. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, paranormal phenomena, and events that science still can't fully explain. On Hidden History, I treat these moments like open case files. Not myths, not superstition, just incomplete explanations waiting for a closer look. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.